I'm delighted to be here. I think it's important you know who I am and I can learn who you are. I'm a VIP. Now, all of you smile because your dictionary says that's a very important person. But my dictionary says that's a village idiot personified. And I can prove that. I arrived on Wednesday with my beloved wife of 52 years, and I opened my valise to look at the schedule, and I didn't realize I'd shuffled the deck. And I said, look, there's a session on how to be successful in macro and MIPS. I need to go to that session. I need to learn that. And I looked down to see who I was on the Friday schedule, and it was me. So I'm going to come down and sit with you and listen to whoever's going to tell you how to do it right. But nonetheless, the worst thing I've ever done, though, is I'm talking to a friend. I'm walking down the hall, got in the elevator, went downstairs, and I said, I've got to go back to my office. I went back up the elevator, went back to my office, and I said, I can't find it. He said, what are you looking for? I said, I can't find my cell phone. I'm talking to him on my cell phone. Now, you've all done that, but you won't admit it. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm going to get started because we've got a long way to go. I have nothing to disclose. I have no conflicts. The only thing I want to sell you is a passion for excellence and a commitment to transforming healthcare. The objectives we have: to see the continuity between organizational focus and systems design, to describe how Southeast Texas Medical Associates transformation between 1995 and 2005 prepared us for MACRA and MIPS, to learn how to fulfill MACRA and MIPS without interfering with the patient-provider relationship. Fourthly, to demonstrate how to meet MIPS requirements with systems redesign. Just a side note, slides 48 through 50 through 83 will not be discussed today, but they're there so that anybody that's interested in looking at the slide deck, which is already on our website at setma.com under presentations, invited, you're welcome to use that. Everything on our website can be taken for free. There's no cost to it. You don't even have to acknowledge where you've received it. This is a link to brief summaries about SETMA's work. I won't go into details other than we are accredited by NCQA as a Tier 3 medical home since 2010, by AAAHC as a medical home and for ambulatory care since 2010, by URAC, and also by the Joint Commission, and our Joint Commission accreditation lasts until 2020. As we began to think about MACRA and MIPS, we first learned what the acronyms mean. And that's a mouthful, to say the least. I asked a man a couple of weeks ago here in San Antonio who was giving a lecture on MACRA and MIPS. I said, can you tell me what MACRA stands for? He said, I don't know. And he was lecturing on it. I said, well, it's not important. We analyzed the reports and designed solutions from CMS's Quality Resource Utilization Report for our 2016 report that came to us from 2014. The link here that you can find is to 24 articles that I wrote last summer about MACRA and MIPS that shows you the process. This is such a slide that shows you where the links are to our provider training, both for MIPS and also for the audit that we do for MIPS that I'll discuss a little bit later. If you think that this is complex, look at the formula for the composite performance score. You have four categories, and you have a quality performance on each, and then you have a weight of each. So there are eight elements, and you multiply that times 100, and you find out what your composite performance score is. It is complicated, but I have to tell you this. I think it makes sense. There are things I'm going to tell you that I don't like about MACRA and MIPS that I think need to be improved, but I think ultimately it's a logical extension from where we have been over the last 15 years or so. There are three things that I want to discuss about our past that describe how we got ready. The first is our principles, of our systems principles. The second is our model of care, and the third is our projection for what the future would look like. The principles are 10. We enunciated these in May of 1999. We discovered 10 years later that these just happened to be the principles for patient-centered medical home, so we were well on our way. First off, we decided that in that month, we would no longer pursue electronic medical records. It was too expensive and too hard if all we gained was the ability to document a patient encounter electronically. So we morphed immediately and went to pursue electronic patient management. We began to design disease management tools, to design clinical decision support tools, because we felt like if we could not leverage the power of electronics to improve the quality of populations of care, panels of care, and individual care, then electronic records would not fulfill its promise. And so that began our process. Secondly, to bring to every patient encounter not what I know or you know, but what is known. And that's possible with proper design of EMR. Thirdly, make it easier to do it right than not do it at all. Many people complain that their EMR actually is costing them time and effort and energy. If that's the issue, then you need to get a new EMR or redesign the one you've got. It ought to make things easier. Let me tell you how that works. In Texas, we have 78 conditions that providers are responsible to report to the state health department. Now, I've amused myself by asking every healthcare provider I meet to name those 78. So if one of you just stand right now and do that for all of us. I can't do it. You can't do it. No one can do it. Now, if you can't name them, how can you remember to report them? I was in a meeting at Texas A&M speaking some years ago. And the professor that was teaching at that time passed out a paper that had those 78 conditions on it. I called my IT department. It was a Saturday. I said, on Monday, I want these deployed on a template in our EMR. But that's not the end of it. I want when a provider makes a diagnosis that's on this list, it automatically triggers a note to our care coordination department, who automatically report it one of three ways and automatically send a note back to the provider saying it's been done. We took one of the most difficult, time-consuming, energy-absorbing task and responsibilities, and we turned it into zero time, zero energy, with perfect performance. It quite frankly drove the state of Texas health department crazy for a little while, because they never had anybody could do it perfectly and do it instantly. And that's how you can take electronics, and through systems analysis and process analysis, you can design solutions that make your job a whole lot easier. One other illustration. In 2010, the American Academy of Family Practice said that we ought to calculate one Framingham risk score every 5 years for each of our patients. We'd been doing numerous ones for years, but we went ahead and deployed all 12 of them. But because we want to make a deal with our patients and say, if you make a change, it will make a difference, we decided to add 5 what-if scenarios. What if you make this change? Will that make a difference in your life? And so now we took 12 computations and added 5 per, that's 60 more, 72 computations. We took an impossible task and made it absolutely impossible. However, with electronics, you can do that in less than 1 second. And when that becomes a part of the nurse's workflow, then to be followed up by the physician to, or nurse practitioner or the PA, to explain to the patient what it means, it can be cost us no time, no energy, and it's very important. Then when they get their summary of their visit, it explains it in great detail. It helps them understand it, so they see, if I make this change in my life, it will make this difference. We learned that from IBM, by the way, in their 1923 work with change agency. I'm not going to go through all of these, but we want to continually challenge providers to improve their performance, and we wanted to infuse new knowledge instantly. Promote continuity of care, enlist patients as partners and collaborators in their own healthcare. Now, this was 1999. It was 2009 before we realized that was one of the elements of patients in a medical home. But 44 years ago, when I started practice medicine, I told my patients, everyone I saw, I'm not going to be your constable. I'm not going to try to enforce health upon you. I'll be your collaborator, your colleague. I'll be your counselor. I will help you achieve the health that you've determined to have. But we've got to be in this together. I can't force you. You have the right to be unhealthy. You have the right to make unhealthy choices. But you don't have the right to do that under my supervision. So if you've made a decision you don't want to be healthy, you're in the wrong place. There's a lot more to that. Those are the 10 principles. Now, those 10 principles were derived from Peter Senge's work at MIT, and it's in the fifth discipline, if any of you read that book. You read that book, and these 10 principles about healthcare will pop out. The second thing I want to talk about that prepared us is our model of care. By 2003, we had developed a model of care that reflects five principles. Number one, the tracking of quality metrics on every patient we see every time we see them. It grew from a few to now over 300 quality metrics that we track on every patient we see. They said, that's ridiculous. No, it's not. If you design the system so that the tracking is done in the background and the tracking is incidental to excellent care, not the intention of care, it's incidental to your practicing quality medicine. And then when you finish, you can click a button, and at the point of care, it'll tell you, did you meet all those standards? Normally you would, and if you didn't, there's a place to go that you can go and fulfill it. So that's what the tracking is. Then the auditing. We believe that without doing analytics, without doing auditing and seeing how we're doing, we can't get where we want to go. That was defined for us in 1858 by Abraham Lincoln. I know you all know the quote, so I won't give it to you. Okay, I'll give it to you. He said this in his speech to the Republican National Convention that was called his House Divided speech. He said, if we can first know where we are and whither we are tending, don't you love that language? Whither we're tending, we can better judge what to do and how to do it. Now, that's analytics. And it describes what's wrong with healthcare today, where there are things wrong with it. And that is, we pretty much know where we want to go. We pretty know what random controlled studies and evidence-based medicine teach us about the goals. What we don't know very often is where we are. And if I want to go from here to Austin, and I have a GPS service that'll tell me where Austin is, but it won't tell me where I am, I can't get to Austin. I have to go north, south, east, or west, or perchance I'm in Austin and just don't know it. And so Abraham Lincoln gave us instructions then, and that's what we've tried to do, is build a system that allows us to audit and then do statistical analysis, because we can have a mean, an average, that's perfect for hemoglobin A1Cs with patients with diabetes. But if our standard deviation is very large, we have large populations that are outside of the treatment corridor that we want to, and so we have to know what our standard deviations are, our mode, our median. We actually know for the last 17 years what our standard deviations have been on hemoglobin A1Cs and several other things that are really important to us. We, because of doing the analysis, we've been able to eliminate ethnic disparities of care in diabetes and hypertension. We've not achieved that yet with dyslipidemia. Then we began in 2009 something that caused some angst. We began public reporting by provider name on over 200 quality metrics at that time. You can look on our website. For 9 years, through the first quarter of this year, and the second quarter will be added, and see how I treat a number of different disorders: diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, congestive heart failure, and so on. We believe if we want our patients to be transparent with us, we ought to be transparent with them. So we tell them how we're doing. One of our best doctors said, when I announced that in August 2009, he said, what if we're not doing a good job? I said, you better change pretty quickly, because we're going to start it. Nobody's gone crazy. Nobody's on lithium or on Valium. And it has changed things. Now, I want to tell you something. Any nurse practitioners here with us? A couple. Here's the reality. You publicly report by provider name. Physicians side by side with nurse practitioners, guess what? The physicians improve their performance. Because nurse practitioners always do better than they do. The greatest compliment I was ever paid by one of our nurse practitioners, she had a doctorate. She said, Dr. Holly, you're getting almost good enough to be a nurse practitioner. I didn't laugh. I was complimented. I thought that was cool. Then the last thing is the design of quality assessment and performance improvement based on those first four steps. And this model of care has put us in good stead in many different ways. And then we designed in 2005 what we call the future of healthcare. And there are four elements. We believe that the methodology of healthcare must be electronic patient management. That's the only way we're going to bring to bear best practices on every encounter we see. Secondly, the content and standards of healthcare delivery must be evidence-based medicine. These seem so obvious, but if we don't state them and establish them as our standards, we'll end up missing them. Thirdly, the structure and organization must be patient-centered medical home. Now, we added that in 2009, but in 2005, it was we are collaborating with our patients and are engaging our patients as our partners in their care. That's really what medical home is all about. And fourthly, the payment methodology must be that of capitation with additional reimbursement for improved quality performance and cost savings. Now, with those three large things, and there are lots of others, on our website, my webmaster tells me if we printed out everything, there's about 59,000 pages of material that we have written there. So this is a thumbnail sketch. Here's where we went. First, we began using the EMR in 1998. That was voluntary. Second, Physician Consortium Performance Improvement, which is a quality measurement set produced by the consortium, we began in 2000. That was voluntary. It was on diabetes. You know there are eight different quality metric standards for diabetes, eight different comprehensive diabetic care in the country. I did a harmonization of those, contacted those eight organizations, and said, look, we can audit. None of them are contradictory. Some of them just have one thing and another have another. Can't we just harmonize these and have one? Their answer was, oh, no, we have to have our own. Needless to say, I wasn't happy. We did HEDIS in 2002. We call this cheating. Have you ever cheated in healthcare? It's fun. If you are going to have a test, and the professor will give you the questions before the test, and it's an open book test, and there's no limit of time as to how long you can take the test, why not look up the answers before the test? And that's what we did with HEDIS. First of all, I didn't know what HEDIS was, and so I learned. And we deployed HEDIS, and so when our providers see a patient and they do an excellent job, then they just click a button, it tells them that they met all the HEDIS standards for that patient. And we don't know just HEDIS on this population or that, but every patient we see. Adult and child. I call that cheating, but obviously there's no moral dilemma here because there's no real cheating. It's just that we're smarter. I've been in meetings at HMOs and they said, you know, this is substandard. And I said, it's not. They said, our data says it is. I said, your data is wrong. And I said, what is the numerator and denominator you use? And they tell me, I said, go look up HEDIS. That's not the numerator and denominator. And they go, said, how'd you know? I said, because we've done it for years. So it really is helpful. Number five, the Physician Quality Reporting Initiative, PQRI, in 2006 was voluntary. We began. And I've already told you that we do public reporting by provider name. Seventh, data analytics for population management. In 2009, we began doing that. And number eight, QRS in 2011, which was no longer voluntary. And then the patient-centered medical home in 2009 and meaningful use in 2011 and so on. These are the things that we've gone through in order to prepare us for MIPS and macro. Now, let's get into the subject you really came for. That's the foundation. The payment for MIPS is going to be based on four different areas: quality, resource use, advanced care information, and clinical practice improvement. Now, those percentages are going to change. They've already changed five times since this deck was created. I mean, it's amazing. And I don't think anybody really knows what they're going to look like until 2019 when they tell us our results. The goal of macro and MIPS is to improve the quality of healthcare and have providers be paid for value. Clinicians will be excluded if three things. They meet a low volume threshold, if they're in the first year of Medicare Part B participation, or three, if they participate in an alternative payment model. MIPS is a single incentive program that streamlines three current programs. Of course, PQRS, we've already talked about, value-based payment, the Medicare EHR incentive, which is meaningful use. And they've added the fourth, which is the fourth component is the clinical practice improvement activities. This is an outline of these. I'm not going to go through this in detail, but I wanted you to have it because it's kind of a formal presentation of what those are, the four different categories. What I really want to do is address this. This tells you where the penalties are going to be and where the bonuses are going to be. And I want to tell you what upsets me about this slide. You see, this is not a win-win. Macro and MIPS is a zero-sum game. For me to win, you've got to lose. For you to win, I've got to lose. We can't together do this to improve the quality of healthcare across America. There are going to be winners and losers. And I don't like that. I think everybody ought to be able to win. If you do an excellent job, you ought to win. If I do an excellent job, I ought to win. And this design, though, says if they're not losers, there will be no winners. Because the only money that you may be paid for this work is if there's somebody that lost payments because it's going to be a budget-neutral process. I've had a discussion with CMS about that. They're very impressed. Said they're going to change it immediately. I think my telephone number is blocked on their... And of course, the alternative payment, the advanced alternative payment models. I tell you one of the things I don't really like about this, the ACOs are fine, and I think that's great. We, for a good while, couldn't participate in the ACO because we're so heavily involved in Medicare Advantage that we didn't have an adequate number of fee-for-service Medicare. We do now. And then, of course, the Comprehensive Primary Care Plus program, which is getting cranked up. One thing I don't like about this is Medicare Advantage, which we've been doing for 20 years under one name or another, as it's changed over the years, is a full risk responsibility based on quality and safety. And and there have been times when we don't get paid because of the risk, and we have an outlier. We have some problems. Most times we do, but I'd like to see Medicare Advantage. I understand their rationale why they don't, but I just get the chance, and I've got you as a captive audience to complain. This is just another pre-packaged thing that tells you whether you'll be under MIPS or under the alternative payment model, and I'll let you look at that yourself. When we began to look at macro and MIPS last summer and think about preparing to be ready in 2017, we looked at the quality. And this is from the clinical quality measures, and as I already told you, we do almost 300 quality metrics and have done them for the last 17 years, so we were quite ready for proving quality. Secondly, advanced care information. We've been using a certified EMR for all that period of time, the meaningful use. We met one and two, and of course three just went away. And quite frankly, as I think it was Charles Howe that said, commented yesterday, that MIPS is actually easier than meaningful use too, and I think he's right. Clinical improvement activities, if you have NCQA Tier 3 or URAC or Joint Commission or AAAHC, that automatically fulfills all the clinical improvements, and we have all four. And then fourthly, the cost. This will be gleaned from claims data. This is one area which strikes terror in the heart of any thoughtful person because we've never been able to look at that data. We don't know what our costs really are. We know what our E&M codes cost and that sort of thing. In 2011, CMS asked us if we would participate in a program and let them use our data to compare 312 coordinated practices, medical home practices, with 312 non-coordinated practices on a number of different levels of quality, cost, safety, and so on. With trepidation and my heart in my hand, I said, yes. I said, okay. I didn't know. I'm in my 44th year practicing medicine now, and I was in 38th or 39th year then, and I had no idea. I know that I practice good medicine, and I try to be sensible about cost, but we'd never seen that data. The data was very good, and I was happy that we had that. Now we have the 2014, which was aggregated in 2015 by CMS and shown to us in 2016. In October of 2016, as we've been looking at this, we realized that our four standards that I discussed with you earlier, electronic medical records, patient-centered medical home, and so on, were parallel to the CMS new MIPS categories. And I want to take a little bit of time with this because I want to show you how quality preparation, if you followed all the PQRI and PQRS and meaningful use and medical home, if you did all those things, then you're not going to have any problem with MIPS and MACRA. On the left-hand side, this is our strategy. First, methodology must be electronic patient management. The MIPS, advancing care information, which is an extension of meaningful use with a certified EMR. They're identical. Secondly, the content and standards of healthcare delivery must be evidence-based medicine. MIPS quality, an extension of PQRI and PQRS, which is 2019, will become MIPS. I'm going to tell you why I don't like the way they've done it, but that'll come in the next. Number three, the structure and organization of healthcare must be patient-centered medical home. And as the clinical practice improvement says, if you're accredited by one of the four agencies, then you've got that fulfilled. There are other ways of fulfilling it, but medical home is the most rational, I think, and up-to-date way to do it. Fourth, the payment methodology must be that of capitation with additional payment for quality and cost savings. The MIPS cost measured by risk-adjusted expectations of care, of cost of care, and the actual cost of care for fee-for-service Medicare and Medicare patients. When I first sketched this out on a piece of paper, I took it to five people in our organization. I said, now, I want you to tell me I'm not hallucinating. Did we really define in 2005 what the government came up with in 2015? And everybody agreed with me that that was the case. And if you can believe that the left-hand column is correct, I know that that you know that the right-hand column is correct. And I think that's why we like the concept of MACRA and MIPS with some exceptions. Here's the most difficult aspects of the new program. Number one, there's not an absolute standard against which healthcare providers will be measured. It's always going to be a competitive thing. And I think when you're talking about quality and safety, competition to improve is good, but it can be destructive. I love Mikhail Brukhishnikov. I'm a great fan of opera and ballet and symphonic music. And he always said, I never try to dance better than someone else. I just try to dance better than myself. I like that. He was never a competitor except competing against himself. I wish there were an absolute standard, but we won't know what that standard is until after the fact. And that was my objection to HEDIS. We didn't know our HEDIS scores until 2 years after the fact when some insurance company paid a consulting company come evaluate our charts. And you know what? Doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs care about what they did 2 years ago? Not very much. It doesn't change behavior. But if you, at the point of care, can show a person that their care is substandard, and they can do that themselves. And that's what PCPI is all about, Physician Consortium Performance Improvement. It was designed by the AMA and the health groups around the nation to help physicians and other providers to improve their performance themselves. That's what PICME, Performance Improvement CME, is all about. And I wish I had time to go through that, but I don't. Number two. Provider evaluation will always be a judgment made 2 years after the fact. I've already said that. Number three, the biggest problem with this moving target is that you have to assume that everyone's results mean the same performance. I will say again, and I'll say here, performance improvement ought to be incidental to excellent care. Quality metrics ought to be tracked incidental to excellent care, not as an intention of care. I never see a patient saying, well, today I'm going to fulfill HEDIS. I see the patient, I'm going to today find out what this patient is concerned about, help this patient design a plan that will help them achieve their goals, suggest to the patient other areas they might need to have improvement on, and then see if I have fulfilled metrics simply by clicking a button, which is going to tell me whether I've done that or not at the point of care. And 98% of the time, we've already done it, and it's provable. Number four, it is possible if everyone begins to perform at a high standard that the distribution would be very narrow. Because what if you were fulfilling a metric at the 95th percentile, and that was still 1.5 standard deviations below the mean? That's possible statistically. And so I think this is a program that is not well designed. Number five, the possibility exists a person could be performing. I've already said that. Number six, larger organizations are duplicitous organizations, and those are not synonyms, may find methods to meet standards intentionally which do not change the trajectory of the quality of healthcare. I want to have more to say about that because it's a major concern with MIPS and MACRO. Number seven, organizations may focus intentionally, and I've already said that. I get ahead of myself. I want to say one other thing that's not written down here. It's not written down because I'm afraid to say it. I will say it, and I will add it to the presentation another time. Some of this almost feels to me like those of us who are socially responsible, those of us who are caring for the most vulnerable patients, those of us who treat Medicare and Medicaid, uninsured, underinsured, those of us that voluntarily participated in the Affordable Care Act and the exchange programs, it sometimes feel like we're being punished and that the people who refuse to take care of those folks and only take fee-for-service or high insurance value patients are being rewarded. I'm not making the accusation. I'm just suggesting it's a possibility, and I'd like to suggest talking to some people who could do something about it. So here we are. At the core of our four strategies is a belief that one or two quality metrics will not change the trajectory. See, if I were been doing PQRI and PQRS, I would have made every provider that sees patients with diabetes fulfill 8 quality metrics on diabetes. Can you imagine the database we would have today if 300,000 physicians and nurse practitioners, or maybe 500,000, were reporting data on PQRI on diabetes and 8 metrics? And we'd know whether they did it with a paper, with dictation, with EMR, with clinical decision support. Can you imagine the ability we could have to begin to make suggestions to these guys sitting down here who are the QIOs for Texas and other places that could know what the best practice is, how best to do it? It always frustrated me. I spoke to the ONC once and I suggested that to them. I think they lost my phone number. They didn't call me back. That's a joke. For PQRI, we had to report on 9 quality metrics about anything. For MIPS, in 2019, it's going to drop down to 6. I would argue that that is a minimalist approach to providers' quality reporting and is unlikely to change healthcare outcomes or quality. I think I can prove that. I was speaking in New York City once, and a professor from the Johns Hopkins, I said that correctly, came up to me and said, "We have found that quality metrics do not help or improve things." I said, "You know, I read that paper, and we had 2 choices. We could do something or nothing. We chose to do something." He walked away as he wasn't going to win that argument. Here we are. We track, I put 200 here just so nobody could go count, because it's closer to 300. And we believe that if you employ a cluster in a galaxy, that you will change healthcare. In Setma's model, a single patient at a single visit for a single condition will have 8 or more quality metrics fulfilled, which will change the outcome of that disease process. If you fulfill all 8 or 10 metrics for diabetes, you will begin to improve the population care that you have for diabetes, and you will certainly improve an individual's care. Here's what it looks like, a cluster. Around diabetes, here are 9 quality metrics, actually 8. And we have them deployed, and there are probably 2 or 3 more because we have all 8 of the diabetes comprehensive metrics sets deployed in our EMR, and we track all of them, and they're all displayed on our website. If you began to fulfill these, meeting the process and the outcomes metrics, and the patient safety and the cost metrics, all the different kinds of metrics there are, you will change healthcare delivery. But 1 or 2, 1 on diabetes and 1 on CHF and 1 on something, it really is not going to change anything. Even if you can get paid for quality work, it does not necessarily you will be doing quality work, as evidenced by the your quality metric set. Now, the following illustrates the concept of a galaxy. Remember that foundational to this concept is the fulfillment of quality metrics is incidental, not intentional. It's incidental to excellent care. We don't want to have somebody going and clicking buttons just to prove that they've done something. We want them to have a process, a disease management strategy, a clinical decision support strategy for taking excellent care of people. And then at the end of that time, see, have I met the metric standards that we've identified? And here's what a galaxy looks like. You have a patient, and I treat old folks like me. You know, my next birthday, I'll be 74. I used to have all my Medicare patients were much older than me. I'm older than many of my Medicare patients now. It's very distressing. It's not distressing. If I, to have the 8 grandchildren I have and the wife of 52 years, if I have to be 74 to do that, I'm in. I'm all in, as the Texas Hold'em says. But here we have a patient with dyslipidemia, diabetes. How many of you have seen those combinations? A patient that has hypertension, diabetes, and dyslipidemia, has congestive heart failure, is obese, and then, of course, our SEPMA's LESS initiative. A long time ago, when we started doing disease management tools, I suddenly realized there were three things we wanted to talk to every patient about: weight loss, stopping smoking, and exercise. So we designed a program, and AHRQ has adopted this on their innovation exchange. I was very pleased with that almost 10 years ago now. And so every patient we see gets evaluated, and I wish I had time to go into it, with the LESS initiative: lose weight, exercise, stop smoking. And every patient gets a document that tells them, you know, about their BMR and their BMI and how they can change it and how they can improve their care and the risk associated with their being overweight. Every patient gets a personalized exercise prescription, and everybody is confronted with the issue of needing to stop smoking. I have a 2x4 room in my office. And if you come to my office as my patient and you won't quit smoking, I will beat you until you do. I said that to a lady in the hospital one time. She got so mad. You can't talk to me like that. I said, ma'am, do you see the smile on my face? I've never struck a patient in my life. I'm not prepared to. I did strike a nurse once. That's a great story. But I said, I'm not going to. Well, what happened was I got to the hospital early, I do that, and I walked past the nurse's station because I knew my patient was down there. I was eager to see how the patient was doing. Walked in the room, nurse is sitting on the bedside, and the IV pole was gone. I said, who stopped the IV? Just said it just like that. She turned around and said, I did. You didn't write any more orders, and I took it out. I didn't say a word. Just turned around, went back to the nurse's station. I'm sitting there going through the chart, and suddenly a finger appears. Do you see? And I look up, and this red-headed lady, I know her name, was screaming at me, and I slammed the chart. Tragically, her hand was still on the chart. I was almost accused of assault and battery. I took her to the back, and I said, ma'am, I'm not yelling at you, and you darn well not yell at me. Fortunately, she moved, but that's how I struck a nurse. But anyway, it was a proud moment. Not true. I love nurses. You should read some of the things. I've address the Texas Nursing Board about expanding the scope of practice for RNs. I think you're greatly underused. But this is a cluster. And I'll tell you, I see many patients where I fulfill 70 or 80 or 90 metrics on a single patient at a single visit, and it is changing their health care, provably changing it. And that's why I'm a little disappointed in MIPS, where you can do 6 and call yourself doing quality work. Now, the quality and the cost. In 2015, we had to do 9 for PQRS. Now MIPS is going to be 6. And in 2014, we performed. 2015, ECMS aggregated our data. In 2016, that data was reported to us. Now, I'm going to give you some data. This will be, I think, more fun maybe than what I'm talking about. This is our where we fit on a scatter graph for quality. This is 0.18 standard deviation from the mean. This is considered average. Now, I don't know just yet exactly where we're getting this data. I guess from PQRI or PQRS, but I can assure you that's going to change drastically. The next is our cost. Now, with the quality, you want to be the right of the curve. You want a positive number. With the cost, the ideal is to be below, but we're still within one standard deviation from the mean, but we're 0.47 on cost, which is higher than the mean, and that's not considered good. But it's certainly not three or four standard deviations. It's not breaking the bank. Now, this is a scatter graph, the little button in the middle. That's where we are. You know who I would really like to talk to? I really would like to talk to the people down here in the left lower quadrant. That means they have high cost and low quality. Because, you know, I bet there's some good doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs there. And I think I could help them. And rather than saying, nah, 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 we're going to get money from you and they're going to pay it to those of us that are up here, I'd much rather go down there and help them. That's what you live your life doing, Jeff, is helping people improve, not judging them. You know, I've never been ashamed that somebody showed me that I wasn't doing as good a job as I could do. I'm only ashamed if I'm not willing to change. And when we began looking at the quality metrics, everything wasn't exactly as it should be. It was not bad because we've been working on this for a while, but it's better now, and it will continue to get better. And we're still not perfect, but we're better than we were. And so I think if we're ever willing to be like Abraham Lincoln and said, if we can first know where we are, and that's the first key to quality improvement. In Minnesota, in 2009, the state legislature passed a bill saying that every provider and every practice in 2010 had to start measuring the D5, five metrics on diabetes. In 2011, they reported the results. I read them. They were horrible. Very few people even fulfilled one. I wrote them. I know they wanted a letter from me. And so I said, you know, I want to tell you, I looked at your data, and I don't have to tell you how bad it is. But I want to congratulate you and compliment you that you've taken the first step to excellence and that you've begun to look at where you are. Because until you know where you are, you can't possibly get to where you want to be. And that's the whole thing with MIPS and MACRA. It's going to give us an opportunity to know where we are in ways that we have never known before, not just on quality metrics and not just on safety and accreditations, but also on total aggregate costs for various conditions. And that's going to be very helpful. I may be old, but I'm not stupid. Well, don't answer that. I want to learn. I wrote a piece last week and said, you know, you never know when the last time is the last time. I remember when my mother, the last time I saw her before she died, I put my arm around her. I said, Mom, we've had a great time, haven't we? She said, yes. I said, so if this turns out to be the last time, it's okay. And she said, yeah, it was the last time. You know, I wonder, when would be the last time I'll learn something? And I hope it's going to be about 1 minute before I kiss my family goodbye and tell them I love them and I care for them. And I hope I have that opportunity. And I'll learn something in that last hour. Because that's really what makes us human, is that we can learn. And so don't ever be ashamed of your current performance. Be ashamed if you don't know it and don't want to know it. There was an article in the Massachusetts Medical Society's journal, I'm blocking on the name. What is it? Somebody tell me. The Massachusetts Medical Society Journal? What? MEJ, whatever. You know, there's an article about this lady. She said, she was an internist. She said, my quality last year was poor. My quality this year is poor. My quality next year is going to be poor. She had what we call total, complete meltdown. She'd given up. And I wrote a response, and they wanted to publish it, but I wouldn't let them take a word out, and it said too long. But if you're interested, I'll be glad to send you a copy. It's on our website. My whole point was, it's okay not to be doing a good job. It's not okay not to know it and not to change and improve. That's what's important, because we all are in the process of improving, hopefully. We're all in the process of learning, and that's what MIPS and MAC are all about. You know, I don't want our dot to be right there in the middle. I want it to be up here in the right-hand quadrant, right up here with the highest quality and the highest and the lowest cost. But I really would like to know who these people are. Not so I could laugh at them or mock them, but I'd love to drive down to wherever they are, and I don't know why I said down or drive wherever they are, and sit down with them and say, you know, what are your struggles? How can we help you design a solution? Now, this is fascinating data, and I don't know if you can see it, but this is the cost data. And you see the acute conditions composite, bacterial pneumonia, urinary tract infection, and dehydration. In this case, we're higher. But you know, I think I know why, and we've already designed a potential solution. We'll know in 2019 whether we achieved it. We treat about 1,500 patients in the nursing home. You know what the most common conditions in the nursing home are? UTI, pneumonia, and dehydration. And many of those patients go to the hospital because the nursing homes are afraid of being sued. We're working with them to help them find alternative methodologies. We've started an infusion clinic so we can treat bacterial pneumonia and UTIs that are severe and dehydration as outpatients. And so we're hopeful to do this. But I think I know why that's the case. Then you look at the chronic conditions, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, heart failure, and we're below the mean. We're doing a really good job of that, and I think a pretty good job. The all-cause hospital readmissions is a little higher than the mean, 15.32, and ours at this time was 16.14. See, here's our problem. The overwhelming majority of our Medicare patients are Medicare Advantage. They're HMO. They're not fee-for-service. And so we don't get to balance this out with the aggressive job we do with these other folks. But so this is the kind of data you're going to get. And I don't mind sharing it with you, because I've already got, the minute I got this, within an hour, I began working on a solution. That's the key. When you know something, are you doing something about it? Yes, we are. I hope that we can come back in a couple of years and show you that we've accomplished that. Now, I've already talked to you about that, the nursing home patients. Now, here's another set of metrics on cost. And everything in parentheses is below the mean. Now, you see, everything is below the mean until you get down to the bottom. And the post-acute services, hospice, SNF, and rehab. Now, here we are over here. LTAC, home health, inpatient rehabilitation, and skilled nursing. Those are the four areas where our costs are higher than the mean. Now, the good news is this, and I mean this being good news. None of these are areas where physicians are performing things to make themselves more money. And we all know that that happens. Two things happened in 1965 that were earth-shattering and life-transforming. Medicare became law, and I got married. Medicare is still the law, and I'm still married. It's not been perfect, because she's not a perfect person. I wish she were here. But she is wonderful. I like nothing better than picking at her. She won't let me pick my nose, so I have to pick at her. Why are ladies so turned off by nasal secretions, and guys find them very amusing and recreational? I don't know. But we're looking at ways to help with these areas to improve them in the post-acute care. Now, here's our implementation of MACRA and MIPS and the evaluation. NCQA recognition Tier 3, we've already talked about. That gets us the clinical practice improvement. 19 years use of certified EMR, meeting meaningful use standards, and now MIPS gets us that part of the advancing care information systems. Pursuing quality standards by the development of a model of care, which includes tracking, auditing, statistical analyzing, public reporting, provider name. That gets us the quality improvement with this data, and there's a link there. And then fourthly, being attentive to the cost of the care we deliver. We know that our Medicare Advantage patients who have zero copay to come see us. 10 years ago, I went to the HMO, 12 years ago, said, I want to have a zero copay. So it costs them nothing to come see us. They said, you're going to be inundated with people abusing the right to come to your practice. I said, I'll take that chance. You know how many patients I've had to chide for abusing that privilege? Zero. These are honorable people. They want to do what's right. And if they understand and know what's right, they're going to do it. Unfortunately, our Medicare fee-for-service patients have a 20% they've got to pay. We've told them, we'll figure it out. Just still come in, but still won't. honorable people, and they won't incur a debt they know they can't fulfill. As we use the final data from 2015, we developed a tool for MIPS quality performance, and this is what I want to spend my time on until we come to time for questions. Oh, 3 minutes to go? Ooh. Okay, the tool. On our EMR, two places, there's a button that says MIPS quality measures. You click that button, and this is what's displayed. These are the metrics we've chosen to do. If in black, it applies to the patient and has been done. If it's in red, it applies to the patient and hasn't been done. If it's gray, it doesn't apply to the patient. If it was one that's not been done, you click a button to the left, it takes you right in the EMR to where you can fulfill it and get credit. Now, I don't know why I had two copies of that. For instance, fall risk assessment. This is the tool that we use. We've been using it along with seven other tools for standard of care, and that we could have chosen any one of them. We chose fall risk because it's so important in the elderly patient population, which we heavily take care of. Now, this is an example of a patient that the medication reconciliation has not been done. You click a button, takes you right in the EMR where you can fulfill it quickly, and then you're back and you can do each one of the others so that it's easier to do it right than not do it at all. Our providers don't have to learn anything. They just have to be willing to pay attention, which they are. Because you have to go to the principal's office if you don't. Now, we also audit our performance every day for the day before. This is a real live audit. It tells you in the first column, the MIPS template not accessed. See, there's one, Julius DiBerini is a neurologist. I don't expect him to do that. But everybody else, Tracy Foster, she just had a bad, no, there's a zero. But you can see, and then the right-hand column, the measures that were not fulfilled. And it's possible that you accessed it and you did everything right, but if the patient's hemoglobin A1C is out of range, or if the patient has this, that, or the other, it won't ever turn black. It will always be red. The rest is the tutorial for our MIPS, so if you're interested in that, you can look at it. We have a moment for questions. I hope this has been helpful. My wife will ask me. My wife will ask me when I get upstairs, she said, "How'd it go?" And I said, "Well, I enjoyed it." That's my standard. Okay, here we have a question. Now, I got the first one. The second was, did we build what we... Yeah, we built everything you see. Our system is totally customized. In fact, to meet meaningful use standards, we had to go back and retrofit. But see, when we started using EMR in 1998, there were no out-of-the-box solutions. And so we had to go back, and we spent $400,000 to be able to meet meaningful use so that we could use the credit of our EMR for their certified, and we did that. And I will tell you after, I have a rigid rule, I will not tell you, I'm not here to promote an EMR. Everything we do, you can take for free. But I'll tell you right after when we use. Anybody else?
Any questions? Well, again, I want to thank you, Dr. Holly. I have a gift for you. With all the instructors of Texas, you've been a great presentation. We thank you for your time.